Chapter 7. Interdiction. The endless service tunnel and the scuff of our boots drew my latest thought out into the open. Passing in, why be a fething commissar?
You think I chose this profession? I was raised in a Schola Progenium after my father, General Hegel Passingen, was slaughtered by orcs in the second outbreak to plague the Perseus Sleeve.
I'd never heard of the outbreak, but assumed they were common enough to keep the Schola rolls full. Who named you Geronimo?
I did. It was the name of an ancient general, one known for his bravery and a long list of wives. Who named you Five?
The Primaris takes credit for that, though I can't say why.
Can't or won't?
I shrugged. Anonymity has been a huge part of my life.
Why is that?
It's meant to protect me. The irony wasn't lost on either of us.
Was that really your brother, the guard major with the noble last name?
I nodded. I was meant to follow in his footsteps, but not like this. Never like this.
Did you really talk to that warp spider?
You noticed.
How could I not? You held it a foot over my head. What did it say?
It voiced its admiration for the work of the commissariat, and I told it that I wasn't afraid of it.
You caught it as it was about to tear me apart.
There was a question in there somewhere. I have a history with the commissariat, but I'm not so blind as to confuse the evils of chaos with those of your ilk. No fething way, I replied. I'll be safer operating alone. I can't be watching my front and back at the same time. The ongoing debate made my first afternoon in the trenches of Gaul seem utterly refreshing. I'd reached a point in my life where I trusted myself. It would take years to reach a similar accord with the commissariat, and I didn't think we had that much time. Commissar Bleacher wouldn't let it go.
You are on parole, pending a satisfactory outcome to the Inquisitor's mission. It will allow you to prove your respect for the Ordo Praefectus.
Ordo Praefectus was the formal name for the commissariat. Their insignia had skulls with wings, symbolizing judgment from on high. They acted without question on the battlefields of mankind, but their authority didn't extend to the playgrounds of the Inquisition. Commissar Passingen will have to prove himself to me.
Meaning?
Meaning one, he leaves his uniform and gun behind. I won't be carrying any weapons and neither will he. And two, he's not my responsibility. If he doesn't make it back alive, it will be on your record, not mine.
That's not acceptable. It would be suicide to infiltrate Tertius unarmed.
Primaris Rovira had heard enough. She put her hand over mine and worked to counter the ambush.
Commissar, you speak out of ignorance. Five saved the life of your junior commissar twice today. I don't want to hear your voice again. Inquisitor Agrimont, if you want my second's help, you'd better make it clear, here and now, that you value his contributions and that he'll be suitably rewarded for his efforts.
We've already outlined his reward.
Feth that. Five has already earned his commission and his name. The commissariat has never had the power to override the Inquisition, so this all comes down to you and your schemes. Step up or use your own operatives.
I couldn't have said it any better. Agrimont was suspiciously alone in the room. Her team was nowhere to be seen. According to Warrant Green, most of them had died following Agrimont's crazy designs. Commissar Passingen didn't say a word. He placed his hat and bolt pistol on the table and slid them in front of Rovira. He was in, no matter what. Feth. Inquisitor Agrimont's ambush had worked. She slid a small wallet containing an inquisitorial badge across to me, bearing the seal of Ordo Hereticus.
Primaris, I acknowledge your point as valid. We will negotiate any further debts between the Imperial Guard and Ordo Hereticus once the results of the proposed interdiction are known.
I could live with that. I was raring to get on with the Inquisitor's power play, and if we made it back, plenty would be owed. I caught the sad look on my mentor's face. What?
Nothing,
she said.
Hurry back.
Inquisitor Agrimont provided the seeds of a plan. The Inquisitor's seal for identification, a 10-mile walk through a tramway maintenance tunnel beneath no man's land, and the access codes to a sub-transit door in the lowest level of Sector 00 in Gaul Tertius. The rest was up to Geronimo and me, really me, and whatever we found along the way. Others in Agrimont's employ had followed the Inquisitor's need for infiltration into each of the surrounding hives, never to be seen or heard from again. The main transport lines from the surrounding hives into Primus had been shut down and barricaded. Aegea V's manic weather patterns scoured the rough landscape in between, but the massive shielded cities were heavily connected via underground service and transit ducts. Each city existed independently, but conditions fluctuated and emergencies arose. With a billion souls living in the vast cluster, stability was everything. We'd reached another gate, 3 miles short of Hive Tertius. I pulled a leather-wrapped pouch out of my backpack. The pouch was heavy, and I was tired of carrying it. "Here," I handed it over. "From now on, I'm a Sub-Zero boss, and you're my bodyguard." Geronimo Passingen wore the Fibrex bodysuit of a private guard and a jacket plated on the inside with strips of ceramide armor. Missing a suitable weapon to keep well-wishers at bay, he seemed to relax as he took hold of the bolt pistol's familiar grip.
"Why?"
"Guns weren't my thing. I need a bodyguard. Are you in or out?" We were 7 mind-bending miles into our narrow trek, and I was bent on making peace. I didn't know how crucial that would be, but the mind-crushing boredom demanded it, if nothing else. Reality seemed to be settling in for Passingen.
"Commissar Bleacher said this was a suicide mission. How will a single bodyguard do you any good?"
Neither Bleacher nor Inquisitor Agramunt had offered a helpful clue about what we might find in Tertius. Even so, the estimation of suicide was probably the right call, especially for the less-than-elusive junior commissar. By Geronimo's rigid posture alone, anyone that looked would know he was military to the core. If Bleacher was right, then it will do a bodyguard good, taking 10 traitor guardsmen down with him. If he was wrong, then you might have a chance to even the score between us.
"You're keeping score?"
"Everyone else is. Why can't I?" I was the bottom of the drum, the dregs, the sign that the Gaul Primus defense was nearly tapped out, but my war was only getting started.
"What's the score between you and Primaris Rivera?"
"I'm her second and head of security. We're on the same side."
"Then why didn't she put up a bigger fight to keep you with her?"
I'd been wondering the same thing. I didn't know who would be gaining the most out of the current game of rabbit in Gaul Tertius, or why Rovira had held her tongue when she could have nixed it all. I'd watched Rovira's back for a year, and a day into the war, I was dropped in an Inquisitor's lap. Inquisitor Agramunt had bid high, ensuring that I wouldn't decline her offer. She was a sucker. Given a chance to operate outside the chain of command, I'd have done the mission for free. Maybe Rovira knew that, or maybe she didn't want to be around when my collar finally blew. "Geronimo, I need a quick nap. It'll give me a chance to scout ahead." Dropping to the dust-covered floor, I slipped into a sleep trance and left my body behind. Traveling in astral form, I made the round trip to Tertius and back in less than a minute. On the way, I found 12 enemy sentries and drained enough of their energy to leave them unconscious, but not dead. I gave Passingen the all-clear signal. We resumed our hike through the last few miles of the narrow tunnel between Primus and Tertius, and a growing miasma of dread. I didn't mention that I'd raced back to our lines outside Primus, or that an early morning attack by the Bloodthorn's forces was underway. I hadn't come across Primaris Rovira or the supporting Psychorarchs, but figured they would go where they were needed most. The final doorway into Tertius was littered with half-dead troopers, including 2 enemy commissars. I removed the ammunition from the commissar's oversized pistols, handing them to Passingen for later use. The idea of a traitor commissar seemed beyond the pale for both of us and would have surely earned each man a bullet to the forehead if we weren't trying to slip in undetected. It was a tricky decision either way. 12 dead guards would certainly raise the alarm, if not a cultist hunting party. 12 unconscious traitors might confuse the enemy, but if that detail reached the right ears, they'd know that someone unusual had come calling. Once we cleared the Hive's vast Ground Zero sector, I couldn't conceive how anyone could track us down, but they certainly had their methods and the numbers to do it. "Geronimo, leave the regulars alive but kill the 2 commissars. Make it look like the troopers did it." He didn't argue. I blitzed the area's sensors with blasts of random energy. Hive Tertius was far from empty. Those in charge might have taken control of the city's Overwatch AI. It analyzed the comms and sensors in every sector, making it best that we try to blend in. Having gained a way in, we scouted downward into heavily populated and less controlled areas. We risked busy lifts when we found one still in use, but mainly used ramps and the plasteel ladders of service shafts to descend through the city's subterranean stack of sectors. The deeper we went, the more violent and aggressive the locals became. Several Sub-Zero gang bosses had stepped into the role of civic overlord, creating their own exclusive domains in each sector. Arbiters and rogue guardsmen vied with the local gangs for territory, or added to their numbers, blocking off entire neighborhoods in an attempt at normalcy and control. It was a hopeless task. Ignoring the hive dwellers, blood cultists made their mark on every sector, leaving gut-wrenching displays at major intersections, plazas, and lift banks. They stacked bodies and painted entire streets with sigils of blood. This widespread activity seemed to keep the remaining citizens at bay. It was more than a warning. It was a curse, working its way throughout the hive and deadening the minds of millions. With incredible numbers of citizens confined below Ground Zero, the power being harvested was terrifying in the extreme. I frequently scouted ahead in my astral form and poked holes in the human barriers that blocked our way. Half of the service lifts still functioned if one could get past the locals that guarded them. I would drop all but one watcher at the larger blockades, giving the others a well-deserved nap. The Sub-Zero gangs seemed to like surprises, and the negotiations through each zone went smoother after the introductions were complete. The remaining watchers seemed to assume I was a bounty hunter. They were eager to share glimpses of trophies or news of upper hive refugees, but mainly wanted us gone. They pointed downward and told us not to linger. Sometimes they shot us in the back for good measure. Whoever was foolish enough to pull the trigger was never given a second chance. Junior Commissar Passingen was an imposing figure, and his body armor earned its keep on more than one occasion. He would feel the pain whenever we made it out, but he rode the adrenaline that kept us both on our feet. His eyes bled, not from injury, but from an uncontrollable itch as we scanned the sigils of blood. They were everywhere, and so were the results. Lower hive levels were never known for their perfect ventilation. The entire city of Gaul Tertius held more than 100 million citizens shelved throughout more than 100 different sectors, each a city with a plascrete floor and a polysteel sky. The uptick in death and displacement had a remarkable effect on the atmosphere, and one had to wonder why the recyclers weren't running at full tilt. The stench added to the bloody landscape's soul-sucking miasma. The murky gray plascrete of a hive city was never a treat, but this was pure torture for those that suffered through it day after day. Each sector offered the same blood-stained vibe of terror and a varying degree of despair. The terror came in the form of random blood cult patrols, buckets included, to collect a tax for the ruling cabal. Nobody took pot shots at them. The despair stemmed from a lack of resistance to the cultists, draining their lives. Caught in an illusion, citizens fought among themselves for space and sovereignty, ignoring the fact that they'd lost it all months ago. Conditions only got rougher as we neared the bottommost sector, the Underhive. It was as if the cult had started at the bottom and worked its way up, claiming the worst sectors first. We'd climbed down a service ladder that spanned two sectors, each 200 feet tall, and exited a little-used shaft into a remote alleyway in Sector 85B, one sector short of the Underhive. We were nearing the bottom of the bloody barrel, 2 miles beneath the surface, and I was beginning to feel at home. The Hive's subterranean sectors tended to become smaller the deeper one got in the stack, following the form of an inverted pyramid. That should have made the local population density that much greater, but in the lowest reaches, failure of the unfit thinned the population. The acolytes of chaos had done the rest. The traitorous forces held total sway, painting the major avenues red with glyphs and controlling all the lift banks except one. The final passage was easy enough to find. One only had to follow the sound of gunfire and the scent of burning flesh. The thick smoke was another sign of places one should never go, as were the Fell Guard, the full company of traitor guardsmen, and the rogue Psyker that readied the concourse for another push forward. The Psyker wielded a bucket and a brush, painting symbols on the ground and walls of the alleyway leading to their target destination, a barricaded lift bank. Behind him, a Fell Guard entity read names from a scroll, one every second, as the bloody brush danced its jig along the plascrete. I'd seen this sort of spell before, in Scola Sicana, but in reverse. The blood-red symbols on the walls were names. Cloaked in astral form, I studied the proceedings and carefully traced the patterns with my mind, until I understood the enemy's curse and its intention. The blood rite bound the souls of its victims into a warp-backed power structure. The spell acted like a funnel, giving the bloodthorn, wherever it was, a growing pool of energy to exploit. Holding back both the defender's barrage and a curtain of raging flame, a translucent wall of power enabled the ongoing brushwork. With every new symbol the rogue concocted, the psychic barrier seemed to shift, inching down the lane toward the elevators. Between the unreal inferno and the service lifts, a makeshift barrier bristled with an assortment of weapons. The blatant resistance was a good sign, the first we'd seen so far against the cultist Bucket Brigade. Our assigned mission beckoned me onward, but I found myself focused on the rogue psyker's presence and the ugly truth of it all. The blood curse was the key, not only to the Underhive domain, but to Hive Tertius, and perhaps the entire cluster. My certainty grew with every passing second. I returned to a secluded alleyway nearby and opened my eyes, saying, McKittrick wasn't allowed to knock. A rogue psyker had bound her in place. Passing and woke from his own light doze.
Who the feth is McKittrick?
She was a friend of mine at Schola Psychana. She knew my real name.
She's here?
No, but thousands, probably tens of thousands, have been butchered and bound by the Bloodthorn and its minions. The lost souls of Gaul will suffer the same fate as McKittrick if we don't cleanse this place and free them all.
The bloody designs on the walls are part of the Bloodthorn.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but Geronimo was right. The unreal markings were the seeds of a curse that grew like a living organism throughout the Hive. We'd been following the spell downward for dozens of sectors, each subterranean layer comprising a city of the damned. Not every avenue or wall had been covered, but a person couldn't go anywhere without a bloody sigil being in view. Every last sector in Sub-Zero was connected except one. Yes, I replied, and with more souls being chained in place with each passing hour. Edgy and in pain, Passingen was eager to end the nightmare. His hands shook, and his eyes searched everywhere for respite, finding none.
Tell me we're almost to the Underhive.
Commissars were a hardy bunch. He could carry on, but the blood leaking from his eyes was a sign of the Bloodthorn's malignant reach. By ruining my memory of Tegan McKittrick's pretty pale blue eyes, it more than pissed me off. The service shaft into the Underhive isn't far, but it's blocked. There's a company of traitor guardsmen backing three Felguard and a rogue psyker. With that much power, it's only a matter of time before they break through.
What do we do?
We do nothing. You will count to 200 and follow the silver path. Passingen's steel grip caught my arm.
What fething path?
The blood maze would be impossible to unravel with human eyes. Every unique glyph would lead one's mind astray. This path, I said. I knelt and brushed my hand across the floor, casting a thin sheen of silver and biomantic energy upon it. Pulling in more energy from Starfire and carefully leveraging the channelers in my head, I maxed out my personal shield and went forward, reading the names of those that passed before me. With each step, the counterspell, a child of my will, followed, growing broader and taller in my wake. Silver energy climbed up the walls, trouncing the spells that held each soul in place. It devoured the wrongness of it all. The names remained, glowing like guide markers for the trip home. As the smoke and cacophony of the standoff drew nearer, my pace grew stronger. Neither side knew what to make of me as I rounded the last corner. The rogue psyker and the trio of Felguard stopped their work as I walked past them, straight through their barrier and into the wall of warp-laden fire. Belligerent rounds from both sides struck my body shield. They'd never met a funnel, let alone the head of security for Primaris Tan Rovira. Not yet. As a psychic parasite, I absorbed the rogue psyker's tactical shields and the unreal flames that scorched the long alley. The Hive's massive air handlers had been feeding the conflagration while barely allowing everyone to breathe. Halting my advance halfway between the forces of chaos and hardcore neutrality, I waited for the alleyway war to run low on ammo. Eventually it did. The surrounding ground was covered by a sea of spent slugs. The exchange had cost me far less energy than I'd consumed on my walk-in. Peering from behind the barricade that blocked access to the service lifts ahead, another psyker, a pyro with a head of fire, scanned the scene and frowned as if I'd stolen their stage. Behind me, the cultist psyker found his opening and screamed,
"Who dares to challenge the might of the Bloodthorn?"
Fire can do funny things when compressed and properly fed. I spun to face my first challenger. I am Five. Who are you? The rogue squeaked.
Darius Rheem.
His hand slapped the wall, searching for the power to defend himself, but he'd been cut off. I tightened my telekinetic grasp on the Psyker and his Felguard escort, forcing them closer together. Who do you serve? The captives fought hard to apply their will, answering in unison.
Sarkis.
The word, part hiss, part scream, faded as the air inside their lungs began to steam. Wrong answer, I whispered back.